Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Okay, so welcome to the sutta class, the word of the Buddha. And this, in case you haven't been here before to this class, is a series of extracts from the suttas, all put together in the form of the Four Noble Truths. And I keep going through this again and again and again. This is basic teachings of the Buddha, but not just basic, just sometimes they're extremely powerful. And they give the essence of how the Buddha taught. And having gone through the first three Noble Truths, we get to the fourth Noble Truth, which is right view. And we did, I think, three sessions on right view. Now we come to the finale of the right view section, which is talking about the Sotapanna, the stream winner. And so here we go, the Sotapanna, or stream enterer. It's on there, yes. When you contemplate in this way, three fetters are abandoned in you. And those three fetters are a view of a permanent essence, what most people call a soul, skeptical doubt, and belief that rites and rituals are sufficient in themselves to reach enlightenment. Those who have abandoned three fetters are all stream enterers, no longer subject to rebirth in a lower realm and headed for full enlightenment. Now straight away, those three fetters, the first of those fetters is the most important in my estimation, the view of a soul, a permanent essence. And anyway, in a few minutes, we'll just get down to what is the view of a permanent essence, the Sakkaya Ditti. And the skeptical doubt, even doubt itself, is a very profound aspect of the mind. A mind which is free from doubt is quite rare. And in fact, the mind which is free from doubt is basically, please excuse me again, is a mind which is free of the five hindrances. To experience a mind free of doubt, you do need to get some stillness in the mind, some deep meditation. And afterwards, whatever you experience, you can perceive it clearly without distorting the data to fit your views. It's like the truth which you experience changes your views, which is why you can only get this perfect view of a stream winner is when that doubt is no longer there. The clarity of the mind is so powerful that you see what is actually the way things are. You may have heard many people talking about the way things are, but to know the way things are, they have the cause for it, and that is samadhi. Samadhi pachaya yata bhutayana dasana. It's the stillness. It's the cause for seeing things as they truly are. And that stillness does refer to the samma samadhi. The deep stillnesses of the jhanas and afterwards. So this is where you see things as they truly are. And so skeptical doubt is gone. And also the belief that rites and rituals are sufficient in themselves to reach enlightenment. And though sometimes we do feel that even if we keep precepts, if we do some particular chanting again and over again, or if we do other such harsh practices, sometimes people still feel that that is enough. And if you keep doing that for long enough, you do get to be enlightened. rites and rituals can be useful, but it's more than just the rites and rituals, it's the letting go which allows you to let go deep enough to get stillness of mind, and the stillness of the mind to give you that clarity to see things as they truly are. I'll be going into more detail on this in a moment. One of the nice things about the stream winner, those who have abandoned three fetters are all stream enterers, no longer subject to rebirth in a lower realm. Why? Even if you've done some bad karma in the past, which will usually take you to a lower realm, you can't get there anymore. Why? And one of the reasons is because seeing no self, that there is no permanent essence, also allows you to see very, very clearly that there's no self, there's nothing which you own, no possessions, even the conduct of the past. You don't own it anymore, which means you're free from it making you get reborn in any lower realms. When you see the truth of non-self, with that you abandon all sense of guilt. Sometimes you may have some remorse, I wish I hadn't done that, but the guilt and the punishment which goes along with that guilt, like sending yourself into a lower realm, is now gone. And for a long time, I couldn't find any reference in the suttas. I always thought that when a person dies, they're judged by some yama god or something and sent to the lower realms if they've done something bad. But that was my wrong reading of the Pali. The job of any sort of spirit or yama god is just to make you remember. What you do with that memory is totally up to you. No god will ever send you into a lower realm, a hell realm, or a hungry ghost realm. Only you think you deserve to be there if you're not a stream winner. Once you're a stream winner, there's no way you'll ever send yourself to a place like that. So that means that those lower realms are cut off from you forever. And you're headed for full enlightenment. Whether you like it or not, you're out of here. And they say that how many more lives have you got if you're a stream winner and you pass away, you die? What's the maximum number of more lives which you have? So some people said seven, some people said six. Which is the right one? Many of you heard me before, it is six, because this life is counted as one. The next life is two, the next life after that is three. So it's six more lives after you die, maximum. You know how it is in Asia, we always count where we are now. When a baby is born, they're 1 year old. And then the next year, the first birthday, they're two. Anyway, now just a little praise of what it's like to be a stream winner. Absolute rule over the earth. Absolute rule. Going to heaven. Supreme sovereignty over all worlds. The fruit of stream winning surpasses them all. That's a very sort of high description from the Dhammapada of what it's like to break through and to realize you've entered the stream. Which is nice. First we said what it is, now what it's like, now how it's done. The causes for the arising of right view of stream winning. Now in Sri Lanka, they call being a stream winner a soul one. And I don't know how many times that people in Sri Lanka come up and said, all I want is to be a soul one. How do you become a soul one? And it's a fair enough comment, because once you're a soul one, you're basically out of here, six more lifetimes at most. So there are two conditions for the arising of the right view, that is the word of another Aryan, and this other thing called yoniso manasikara. And yoniso manasikara literally means manasikara is work of the mind, which goes back to the source, the yoni. So yoni is like the womb where things come from, the cause of things. And this you will find throughout the Buddha's teaching, not just saying, like in the Satipatthana, now where does rupa come from? Oh, rupa, it rises and passes away. That is not what actually the Buddha said. He said, why? What's the causes for, say, like physical or body coming into being? What's the cause of it for it disappearing? In a Vedana, this experience or feeling, some people say, not just watching it come and go, but why it comes, why it goes. Get to the causes of things. Suffering. The Buddha never just said about suffering. That was the first noble truth. But the second noble truth, the cause of suffering, working back to the source, why, where does it come from? And that's a classic theme of the Buddha's teaching called the Dhamma. Yeah, this is it. Why? Where did it come from? So this is where we have the work of the mind which goes back to the source, and the words of another Aryan, an Aryan being another stream winner, once returned, non-returned arahat. And that's very, very important, because that's one of the reasons why it is important to come and listen to teachings like this, because they have a power. When I say brainwashing you, I really mean that. It conditions you, gives you another way of looking at things, and then you follow that. It gives you the map. And the work of the mind, which goes back to the source, use the power of your mind as a flashlight. Those two together can actually, you can find the treasure. And also, the Buddha said, there are five factors that build on right view and take it to full enlightenment. That's the virtue, the sila, the learning and the discussion. I like this one because it's not just learning about the Dhamma, but discussing it as well, having the opportunity to ask questions and get answers. That ability to question is, again, very, very crucial. You may have sort of listened to so many teachings, but have you had the opportunity to ask those relevant questions? So if there's any misunderstanding or there's any kind of wrong view, you can question somebody and get decent answers. I always remember with an Ajahn Chah, you could always ask him questions, even silly questions, but didn't matter. Always to ask and answer questions. He wasn't just a great teacher. He was great to be able to answer your questions. And stillness and insight. I think you all know what stillness and insight is. That's samatha and vipassana. Not just one, but both. Now, that's almost like an intro to this today's session. What is the view of a permanent essence? This is the big problem. It's called Sakaya Ditti. And when we say Sakaya Ditti, just because we got that word, that part of that word is a compound word, Sakaya, people often think that Kaya means just body. And believe it or not, there are some people over in Thailand, Buddhists, some even monks, and they take that to mean that Sakaya Ditti is the view that somehow that you are part of the body or belong to the body, your sense of self is, you know, taken up with the body. And as soon as you see that the body is impermanent, doesn't carry on, you think, oh, that's a stream winner. And that is one of the problems where a person doesn't really look at the suttas close enough and they get their own interpretations of these words. Of course, that's nothing to do with the view of a permanent essence. This is how the Buddha described what this view is. Friend Visakha, one who is an Aryan, that's a stream we know or above, cannot regard the body or Vedana, what I usually call experience, perception, will, or consciousnesses, being the five components of existence, you can't regard any of these as a permanent essence, nor a permanent essence as possessing any of these five components of existence, nor any of the five components of existence as within a permanent essence, nor a permanent essence as within any of the five components of existence. That is how Sakkaya Ditti comes not to be. And I always usually emphasize on that statement, or consciousnesses, because this is how the Buddha taught. There are six consciousnesses, and if you regard any one of these as a permanent essence, or as a permanent essence possessing any of the six types of consciousness, or like the mind, if you think that the permanent essence possesses a mind, or is the same as the mind, or that the mind is within a permanent essence, or permanent essence is within the mind, that is not true. Now we have an explanation here from the Patisambhida Magga. The Patisambhida Magga, it is part of the Sutta Pitaka, part of the Kudaka Nikaya, and it seems to be one of the last parts of that Sutta Pitaka. One who is an Aryan, a stream winner or more, does not regard the mind as a permanent essence, like the flame and hue of a lamp. The flame and the hue are just different aspects, but it doesn't regard the mind as the permanent essence of the soul. Does not regard the mind as possessing a permanent essence, like a tree possesses a shadow. Does not regard the mind as within a permanent essence, like the scent is within a flower. And does not regard a permanent essence as within the mind, like a jewel in some sort of casket. So the mind is part of the five components of existence, the six types of consciousness. That is sort of emphasized in the Patisambhida Magga. Now, any questions about that? If not, we can carry on, and if a question comes back afterwards, you're most welcome to ask it. Now, one of the causes for the arising of right view, the stream winner, is the words of another, mean from one who has seen through personality view, an Aryan. Now the words of another, I've seen in some Westerner who wanted to try and find some connection between Buddhism and Christianity, said the word of another, paratogosa, meant the word of God, or the sweet voice of Jesus, or something like that. And it's crazy just how people can make something which is just one phrase and interpret it in all sorts of ridiculous ways. What the words of another mean is from one who has seen through the personality view. And this is a cause and effect relationship here which makes it very clear. One who is shameless, reckless and heedless will be unable to abandon, disrespect, being difficult to admonish, and keeping bad company. One who is disrespectful, incorrigible, and keeps bad company will be unable to abandon lack of faith, stinginess, and laziness. One who is lacking in faith, uncharitable, and lazy will be unable to abandon restlessness, lack of restraint, and immorality. See, three things lead to the next three things, which lead to the next three things. One who is restless, unrestrained, and immoral will be unable to abandon their fault-finding mind, disinterest in seeing Aryans and hearing their teachings. That's a lot of times why people won't come to the temple, have fault-finding minds. Why do you want to go and see that lazy fat monk for? They're finding fault. And sometimes that finding fault is just getting a bit over the top. One who is not interested in meeting with Aryans does not hear the teachings of an Aryan, but has a fault-finding mind, will be unable to establish mindfulness and understanding of the purpose. They'll be distracted. One who is without mindfulness and understanding with a wandering mind will be unable to abandon useless trains of thought, following a wrong path and mental sluggishness. One who wastes time on useless thinking, on following a wrong path leading to a dull mind, will be unable to abandon the view of a permanent essence, skeptical doubt, and believe in rites and rituals, the first three of the five fetters. And one who has not abandoned the first three of the five basic fetters will be unable to abandon desire for the world of the five senses, aversion and delusion, those called the three poisons. One who has not abandoned the three poisons, kilesa, will not be able to abandon birth, aging and death. And you see, I put in bold characters, does not hear the teachings of an Aryan. That is why hearing the teachings of an Aryan is important for the whole path of understanding the Dhamma and becoming a stream winner and fully enlightened. The next simile is one of my favorites, because when we have the idea of a stream winner, sometimes it means that it's a bit too, I wouldn't say intellectual, but it doesn't really ground it in the reality of the experience which you have in the world. This seven in the water simile does. That's one of the reasons why I really like this simile. And apparently it was one of the favorite similes of the late King of Thailand, King Rama the Ninth. Stream winning and a seven in the water simile. There are these seven kinds of persons similar to those in the water. I used to call this like people who are shipwrecked, which is probably the obvious reason why they'd be in the water for the first place. One who goes under and drowns, almost drowns immediately. They are one with bad qualities. Number two, one who floats and then drowns, meaning good at first, but then develops bad qualities. Number three, one who floats and keeps their head above water, meaning the good qualities in them become even stronger. Four, this is a development of the third one, who manage to keep their head above water because of the good sealer. The above who looks around and sees safety, meaning the stream enterer. This is one who's floating in the water, having been shipwrecked, and they look around and they see there's dry land over there. That's the stream enterer. And if that was you, what would you do if you saw dry land? Doesn't matter how tired you were, you go swimming towards the dry land. And so the above who is swimming to safety, meaning the once returner, we only get reborn once into this world. And the above who feels solid earth underfoot, they're so close to dry land. They don't need to swim anymore. They can wade the last distance to land. And lastly, the above who is safe on dry land, meaning the arahat. So that's a nice simile said by the Buddha, the seven in the water simile. And that's when one is a stream winner. Now, this next one, the Jhan Anagami, this was something which, when I read it, kind of surprised me. Not really shocked me, but just, yeah, I can understand this. Just as when the sky is clear and cloudless, the sun ascending in the sky dispels all darkness as it shines and radiates. So too, with the dust-free, stainless Dhamma eye arises in you, then together with the arising of vision, you abandon three fetters, the view of a permanent essence, doubt, and a wrong grasp of behavior and observances. Afterwards, when you restrain two states, wanting and aversion, then totally secluded from the five senses, secluded from the five hindrances, you enter and dwell for a while in the first jhana, which consists of rapture and pleasure born of freedom from the five senses. That's what one is focusing on, what it consists of. The bliss, the rapture and pleasure born of being free from the five senses. In other words, you can't hear anything, you can't see anything, even if you had your eyes open. You can't smell, taste, or the physical body. You can't feel any touches anymore. And because it's a rapture and pleasure born of that freedom from the five senses, accompanied by movements of the mind onto the bliss and holding the bliss. If you should pass away while in jhana, there is no fetter bound by which you would ever return to this world. You get reborn. You just exist in what we call the jhana realms. And when they fade away, so do you. You're gone. That's where the parinirvana takes place. Never returning to this world anymore. If you're in a jhana and pass away. As well as that, they also have a similar teaching of the Buddha, where if you've done lots of jhana and you're a stream winner already and you practice jhana a lot, even at your passing away, you can enter one of those jhana realms, and because you are already a stream winner, you never come back anywhere. You have that jhana realm which is pretty blissful. And when that fades away, so do you. That's why they call it an anagami, no return. It's almost, if there ever was a shortcut to nibbana, that is it. You're only a stream winner, but nevertheless, the stream winner plus the jhana means you are a non-returner anagami. I thought that was pretty cool. Now, if you are an anagami in this realm, what would it be like? Because there was a monk called Kemaka. He was an Aryan, very good meditator and understander of the Dhamma, but he was a non-returner, hadn't finally got to being an arahat. Why? Friend Kemaka, Friend Kemaka, when you speak of this I am, what is it that you speak of as I am? He replied, friends, I do not speak of form or like body as I am. nor do I speak of I am as apart from form. I do not speak of experience as I am, nor of perception as I am, nor of will as I am, nor of consciousnesses as I am. Nor do I speak of I am apart from consciousnesses. Again, the five khandhas. Friends, although the thought I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five components of existence, still I do not regard anything among them as this I am. And he explains further. Suppose, friends, there is the scent of a lotus. Would you be speaking rightly if you were to say, the scent belongs to the petals, or the scent belongs to the stalk, or the scent belongs to the pistils? And how, friend, should you answer if you were to answer rightly? You should say, answer, the scent belongs to the flower. So too, friend, I do not speak of form as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from form, nor do I speak of experience, of perception, of will, of consciousnesses as I am, nor do I speak of I am as apart from consciousnesses. Friend, although the thought I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five components of existence, still I do not regard anything among them as this I am. Friends, even though a noble disciple has abandoned the five basic fetters, still in relation to the five components of existence, there lingers in them a residual thought, I am, a desire, I am, an underlying tendency, I am, that has not yet been uprooted. It's a residual thought. Sometime later, they dwell contemplating dependency on causes of the five components of existence, such as form, its origin, its passing away, such as experience, such as perception, such as will, such are consciousnesses, such as their origin, such are their passing away. As they dwell contemplating the dependency on causes of the five components of existence, the residual thought I am, the desire I am, the underlying tendency I am, that has not yet been uprooted. This comes to be uprooted. And now the simile, to make this even clearer. Suppose you washed a cloth in a washing machine. Now you see straight away this is not a literal translation of what's in the suttas. They did not have washing machines in the time of the Buddha. They say, suppose that somebody washed a cloth in, I think, cow dung, which is what they used to do in those days. Now, if I had translated it literally, then you think you get distracted by the really uniqueness of that form of washing. So I just changed the simile and kept the meaning. Suppose you washed a cloth in a washing machine, rinsed and spun it, and then put it in a dryer. Although that cloth will be clean, still it might retain the residual smell of the soap powder. Then you would hang it out in the sun to air, and after a while, the residual smell of the soap powder would vanish. So too, friends, even though a noble disciple has abandoned the five lower fetters, still in relation to the five components of existence, there lingers in them a residual thought, I am, a desire, I am, an underlying tendency, I am, that has not yet been uprooted. As you dwell contemplating dependency on causes of the five components of existence, the residual thought, I am, the desire, I am, the underlying tendency I am, that had not yet been uprooted, this comes to be uprooted. Any questions on this so far? One thing which I didn't add here was, you can see that kaimukkha, free from the thought, I am. There are what the Buddha called the three vipalasas, the distortion of the cognitive process, views, condition, perceptions, and perceptions condition thoughts, and then thoughts come back to condition your views. If you have a wrong view, that perverts, distorts your perceptions. You only see what you want to see. You cannot see what is abhorrent to you, challenging to you. And then from the perceptions, from those, you have your thoughts. And the thoughts reinforce the views. And you can see from here, the first thing which is abandoned or is straightened out is one's views. Once the views have been straightened out, you have right view. It does take a while to get right perceptions. This is not the best simile, but I know many people when they used to smoke cigarettes. They knew cigarettes were bad for their health. They had no doubt about that. They had the wisdom, the right view that cigarettes were bad for their health. But they can still, their perceptions were a little bit bent. It took them a while before they could give up smoking. People might realize there's no permanent essence inside. They've seen that, they know that, but it takes a while for that view to start changing their perceptions and the perception to change their thoughts. For the right view to percolate through the other cognitive processes so that they don't just have right view, they have right perception and right thought. It's the thought which is straightened up last of all. That's the three vipalasas. Now, any questions or should I carry on? Yeah, go on, quick one, Eddie. Yes. 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 They're part of the 31 realms of existence. We need to have the realms which are based on the jhanas. But once one is in one of those realms, one cannot visit another realm. So in some heavenly realms, even in the Anagama realm, it's okay. You're asking how does those jhana realms compare to the 31 realms of existence? Those jhana realms, I forget exactly now, I think it's 12 of those 31 planes of existence are the jhana realms. And that is where it is just a one-kanda existence. Just, is that true? Yeah, I think, well, just the mind, there's no body there at all. Maybe four-kanda existence, they would say, so yeah. Four-kanda, but there's no physical body there in those jhana realms, which is one of the reasons where they can last a very, very, very long time. And it's one of the reasons why at the end of the universe, you know, it's not just a big crunch, but just, you know, when this whole universe just runs out of energy, you know, or just it gets all dispersed and so nothing can really exist in it. Where do all human beings go? Where can they get reborn? That's where they say they mostly get reborn in the second jhana realms. There's no other place for them. And there they live until the next eon starts. So those are referring to the states which, you know, they call the jhana realms. And the point is that, you know, if you are a stream winner and you go to one of those jhana realms, that's it. You never come back anywhere else. No, it's not part of the karma loka. The jhana realms are apart from the karma loka. The word karma in this sense means five senses. So you haven't got five senses anymore, you've just got the sixth sense. That's why it's pretty blissful. Okay. You got one yourself? I got some more running to do, Bill. No, it's okay. Oh, this one first of all. Yes.
The word of Arya is like some person who is so one, or just listening to Buddha Dhamma from any person?
Okay. You do need more than just listening to the Dhamma. One of the difficulties with assessing what actually is a stream winner and what is somebody on the path of being a stream winner is often they make no distinction between those two. A good example of that is the story of the last months of the Buddha. You may remember that many people tried to assassinate the Buddha, and that the king had arranged an assassin to go to the Buddha and chop off his head, or attack him with a sword. And then there were two other assassins to kill the first assassin, four to kill the two assassins, eight assassins to kill the four who killed the two who killed the one, and 16 assassins to kill the eight assassins. And he thought that way that he would cover the tracks of actually who killed who. And, fair enough, that was an interesting story. But one thing which really kind of challenged me when I read that is the first assassin, he found the Buddha and was about to assassinate him, but the Buddha was just too kind. This sweet old man, just meditating with so much loving kindness, he could not attack him at all. And so because of that, he said, look, I came here to kill you, I just can't do this, I ask forgiveness. And the Buddha said, your forgiveness is accepted. And the Buddha gave him a very short Dhamma teaching, and that assassin became a stream winner. And I hadn't done any mindfulness training, virtue was pretty sus, and no meditation, hardly knew any Dhamma except just what he heard in front of the Buddha. What do you mean being a stream winner? That's really stretching it a lot. And then the two came and the same thing happened. They were looking, where's the one? And then the Buddha gave them the Dhamma. They asked forgiveness too. They were about to kill somebody. And then the same happened with the four, with the eight, with the 16. They all became stream winners. So if any of you want to become a stream winner, that's the easy way to do it. Now, what was actually going on there? When you get inspired, deeply inspired, especially by a Buddha, then you know there's something very appealing there. And you get this faith, incredible faith. And that may be enough to make you on the path to being a stream winner. Sadhanusari, following the path of faith. And of course, if you are following the path of faith, it's not just you don't do anything. You can't help it but keeping precepts. It's common sense to keep the precepts. You will start to meditate, you can't help it, you will get wisdom. You're on the path. And the thing with when you're on the path to being a stream winner, you have to attain that stream winning, the fruit, before you die. And to emphasize the point, that Buddha even made this statement, that even if the universe is about to end, the universe has to wait for you until you fulfill your attainment of stream winning before the universe can stop. That was just making a very strong point, how essential this is. So if you are on the path of being a stream winner in this life, then you will be a stream winner before you die or at your death. So it is so certain that sometimes in party they would say that yes, you are a stream winner, even though you're not really, but it's inevitable. And the best simile I can give for that is when I used to watch movies and the gangster movies, they say, Bill, You stole money from us. You're dead. This is only... Of course, you never steal. You're just such an honourable man. What it really means is that your death is certain. But the way they say it, even in English, is like, you're dead. You're a stream winner. You know, it's happened. Although it hasn't happened, but it's bound to happen. And that gives a lot of confusion between people. To be a real stream winner, it's work of the mind which goes back to the source, sees the causes and effects. The words of another Aryan, you need both of those. And so, those are the ways. And in brief, what you really need to be a stream winner is the Eightfold Path. We had lots of discussions as monks, do you really need jhanas to become a stream winner? Some people say, well, there's not really firm evidence in here of the suttas. We all think that's necessary. You do need the stream winner, that sort of power, to understand oneself. And to give the best simile, you've heard it so many times, I'll just say in brief, was the frog in the water needs to leave the water to understand what water is. You need to leave the role of the five senses and things like will, see things actually vanishing, which you never expected could vanish. And then it becomes quite obvious that what you took to be a permanent essence of self wasn't. Have I confused you again?
No, it's very good, thank you.
Okay. El had a question.
Thank you, Ajahn. In relation to the words of another, for example, if someone didn't have access to a Buddhist community and a teacher in person, would it be okay, would it be counted as the words of another if they were listening online or if they were accessing teachers' teachings from the past that had been recorded who've passed away?
Yes, that qualifies as words of another. They even mentioned that even reading the suttas, that's the words of the Buddha. So that's pretty powerful. But again, the problems with reading suttas is you can't understand Pali, even if you studied it. Sometimes just the way it was used, being born in that community, you understand much more of it. Even like Sinhalese, as many Sri Lankan speakers here, but would you understand Sinhalese it was as it maybe was spoken by King Duttagamani? Sometimes even language does change to get a full understanding of what it meant. You know, you would have to understand this people's culture 25 centuries earlier. That is why these are great suttas and they're inspiring. But it takes a while before you can understand, you know, what their meaning is. That's why it is, the suttas can be useful. But, you know, these days I'm kind of bamboozled myself why many people read these suttas and get 10 different ideas from them. So that's why it needs to be someone who is an Aryan, who can understand some of the importance of what these things actually say.
Thank you.
But if it's on the internet, no trouble. Okay. We go further, free from all speculative views. Somebody asked, then does the Buddha hold any speculative belief at all? What is speculation? It is things which we can kind of have an idea about, but which you haven't had no experience of. Not like direct understanding. Speculative belief is something that the Buddha has put away. For the Buddha has seen this. Such is form, like body. Such is its disappearance. So such is its origin, such is its disappearance. And again, it's not just, you know, knowing that form comes and goes, it's also why it comes and why it goes. Such is Vedana, experience. Such is origin, such is disappearance. Such is perception. Such perception's origin. Such is the disappearance of perception. Such is will. And it's the rough but powerful translation of sankhara. Such is will, such is the origin of will. Where does it come from? Such is its disappearance. Such are the consciousnesses. Such are their origin. Where does consciousness come from? Why is there consciousness? Such is their disappearance. Therefore I say, said the Buddha, with the destruction, fading away, cessation, giving up and relinquishing of all conceptual proliferations. That is the word papancha. We used to use that word a lot, conceptual proliferations. All philosophizing, all I-making, mine-making, and the underlying tendency to assuming a permanent essence. The Buddha is liberated through exhausting the fuel that drives rebirth. That's incredibly powerful. So powerful, I'm going to read it out again. Therefore I say, with a destruction, not destruction of a self or a body or anything, of the destruction of the papancha, the conceptual proliferations, the destruction, the fading away, cessation, giving up and relinquishing of all conceptual proliferations, all philosophizing, all I-making, mind-making, and the underlying tendency to assuming a permanent essence. The Buddha is liberated through exhausting the fuel that drives rebirth. Three characteristics. Whether Buddhas arise or not, there persists that law, that stable Dhamma, that fixed course of the Dhamma. All phenomena that arise from a cause are impermanent, suffering, are not a permanent essence. A Buddha awakens to this and breaks through to it, then explains it, teaches it, proclaims it, establishes it, discloses it, analyzes it, and elucidates it. And what is it that the wise in the world agree upon as not existing, or which I too say does not exist? Form that is permanent, stable and eternal, not subject to change. This the wise in the world agree upon as non-existing, and I too say that it does not exist. Experience that is permanent, stable and eternal, not subject to change. This the wise in the world agree upon as non-existing, and I too say that it does not exist. Perception that is permanent, stable and eternal, not subject to change. This the wise in the world agree upon as not existing, and I too say that it does not exist. Will that is permanent, stable and eternal, not subject to change, this the wise in the world agree upon as not existing, and I too say that it does not exist. Consciousness, any of the six, including mind, that is permanent, stable and eternal, not subject to change, this the wise in the world agree upon as not existing, and I too say that it does not exist. It is impossible, saying the Buddha, and inconceivable that a person who is enlightened or on the path to enlightenment, an Arian, could consider any phenomena that arises from a cause as permanent, as pleasurable, and as a soul. There is no such possibility. But it is possible that an unenlightened worldling might consider some phenomena, the rise from a cause, as permanent, as pleasurable, and as a soul. There is such a possibility. Therefore, any kind of form whatsoever, any kind of experience whatsoever, any kind of perception whatsoever, any kind of will whatsoever, any kind of consciousness whatsoever, whether past, future, or present, one's own or others, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all form, experience, perception, will, consciousnesses should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not a permanent essence. Now this next saying is absolutely brilliant. This is from the Visuddhimagga. This is not the suttas, but it's so brilliant, I have to include it. Mere dukkha, mere suffering exists. No sufferer is found. The deed is, but no doer of the deed is there. Nibbana is, but not a person who enters it. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. I remember giving lots of talks about that because it's so inspiring. Nibbana, if you went to enter Nibbana, you've got to disappear first. Nibbana is, but not a person who enters it. If you want to walk the path, don't be a traveller. The path is, but no traveller on it is seen. You vanish, you disappear, and the more you disappear, the wider that path is. When you're actually walking that path, it's just incredibly narrow, you keep falling off. If you disappear, then that path is like a superhighway, 108 metres wide, you can't miss it. Don't travel it. The deed is, but do you really do it? Suffering exists, but there is no sufferer, no being. In those who do not understand, say, form as it really is, who do not know and see its origin and cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, that think an enlightened one exists after death, or does not exist after death, or both exists and does not exist after death, or neither exists nor does not exist after death. It is those who do not see experience as it really is, who do not see perception as it really is, who do not know and see will as it really is, who do not know and see consciousnesses as they really are, who do not know and see their origin of consciousnesses, their cessation and the way leading to their cessation, that think an enlightened one exists after death, or does not exist after death, or both exist and does not exist after death, or neither exists nor does not exist after death. But one who knows and sees form, experience, perception, will, consciousnesses as they really are, who knows and sees their origin, their cessation, and the way leading to their cessation, they do not think an enlightened one exists after death, or does not exist after death, or both exist and does not exist after death, or neither exists nor does not exist after death. They do not even think like that. Now, the next sutta, again, is another one of my favourites, because I love putting my favourites. This is my anthology, and of course I put my favourites in it. This is a Yamaka Sutta. The Yamaka was someone who said, after death the Buddha is annihilated. So, Sariputta asked Yamaka, do you regard the body, experience, perception, will, or consciousnesses as an enlightened one? No, Venerable, says Yamaka to Sariputta. Do you regard an enlightened one as within the body
as within experience, as within perception, as within will, or as within consciousnesses? No, Venerable. Do you regard an enlightened one as separate from the body, as separate from experience, as separate from perception, as separate from will, as separate from consciousnesses? No, Venerable. Do you regard the body, experience, perception, will, and consciousnesses taken all together as an enlightened one? No, Venerable. Do you take an enlightened one as one who is without form, without experience, without perception, without will, without consciousnesses? You know, an enlightened one is unconscious. No, Venerable. But Yamaka, when an enlightened one is not apprehended by you as real and actual here in this very life, is it fitting for you to declare that an enlightened one is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death? If Yamaka, they were to ask you what happens to an enlightened one with the breakup of their body after death, what would you answer? And Yamaka has now got it. I would answer that the body is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Experience is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Perception is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Will is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Consciousnesses are impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Good, Yamaka, good, says Sariputta. If there is the view, the permanent essence and the body are the same. There's no living of the holy life. And if there is the view, the permanent essence is one thing, the body is another, there's no living of the holy life. Without veering towards either of these extremes, the Buddha teaches the Dharma by the middle, dependent origination and dependent cessation. One who sees dependent origination and cessation sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination and cessation. I put this in here because this is another definition of right view. If you understand dependent origination as it truly is, then you are a stream winner. The one who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination. The one who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. With delusion as its cause, the will comes to be. With will as a cause, consciousnesses, even the mind. With consciousness as the cause, the name and form, nama-rupa, which are the objects of consciousnesses. With name and form as the cause, the six sense bases. With the six sense bases as a cause, sensory contact. With sensory contact as its cause, experience. With experience as cause, wanting. With wanting as a cause, fuel. And the word fuel here is upadana. It literally does mean taking up as a source of continuity, like the fuel in your car. With fuel as a cause, these states of existence, with states of existence as a cause, rebirth. With rebirth as a cause, aging and death, sorrow, crying, pain, unhappiness, and distress come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. No God, no Brahma can be called the maker of life. Empty phenomena roll on, dependent on conditions all. The cause and effect process, no being in charge. But when a meditator has abandoned delusion and aroused true knowledge, then with the fading away of delusion and the arising of true knowledge, one does not generate a meritorious volition or demeritorious volition or neutral volition. When delusion is gone,
that volition, the will, stops. But with the remainless fading away and cessation of delusion comes cessation of will. With the cessation of will, cessation of consciousness is, that has to be in the next life. When you're enlightened, you don't become unconscious. With the cessation of consciousnesses, cessation of the objects of consciousnesses, name and form. With the cessation of name and form, cessation of the six sense bases, cessation of the six sense bases, the sensation of sensory contact. With the cessation of sensory contact, the cessation of experience. Cessation of experience, cessation of wanting. Cessation of wanting, cessation of fuel. Cessation of fuel, the cessation of states of existence. The cessation of states of existence, cessation of rebirth. Cessation of rebirth, aging, death, sorrow, crying, pain, unhappiness, and distress cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Home builder, or house builder, you have now been seen, said the Buddha. You shall build no houses again. Your rafters have been broken, and your gables all torn. Thrown off course, the citta, the mind, will be destroyed right here. It's a Theravada. Without any doubt, mind, you shall be destroyed. That's all I'm going to be teaching today, apart from questions. That is the end of the right view, or rather the end of wrong view. Okay, now questions.
Ajahn Brahm, excellent sutta class, excellent, 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 I think. Yeah. With view to the last one, you know, dependent origination, you know, these conditions, that this ceases, that ceases. Our current world, you know, we are conditioned, you know, to believe on the dependent origination, not the ceasing. You know.
Yeah.
It's so strong in us, you know, the medical, with everything, all these things, and sometimes it's, when we try to, this, the, you know, it's so strong in us, and this Buddha teaching provides a lot of relief to us. See what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Mm.
Even many times when we talk about paticca sammupada, so it's always described as dependent origination. And just to be a bit rebellious, you never have dependent origination explained by the Buddha without dependent cessation.
Mm.
So sometimes it's not quite accurately correct to say paticca sammupada means dependent cessation, but that's implied in there.
Mm.
So dependent cessation, how cessation happens. So you can no longer need to get reborn anymore.
Mm.
You're out of here. I'm destroying the membership of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Okay, I think there may be some questions on the internet over there. So I think it's worthwhile because you are all very good today, and we managed to get through this quite quickly. So, may I do a few questions on the internet? Let's see how it goes here. Yong Ji An, what is the cause for the arising and cessation of the five aggregates? Why do you mention that at all? Which aggregate are you talking about? You have the body. What is the cause of the arising of the body and cessation of the body? If you look in the Satipatthana Samyutta, sometimes people just think of Satipatthana and just know the usual two big suttas, but they also have the Satipatthana Samyutta where they give what it means to see the arising of, let's say, the body and the ceasing of the body. It's not just seeing the body come and go, it's why it comes and why it goes. And they have like the four causes for the arising of a body. Five, sorry. And the arising and sustenance. Like the solid food is one of those causes. Is it four or five? I think it's four, isn't it? It's one is the body. One is the experience,
the senses, the five senses. It's what they say, and it's so true. If you were deaf and blind and couldn't feel anything in your body, if you had no sensory activity, the body would not survive. It needs that sensory experience to survive. It also needs will to survive. And also, I think consciousness is the last one. It does need those things. So that's where the body comes from, what causes it. When those things disappear, then of course the body disappears. When it comes to perception, what's the cause of perception? You can see it down here. Perception is part of the sensory contact. You need to have a sensory experience before perception comes. If sensory perception finishes, sensory contact finishes, experience finishes, then there's no perception. When it comes to vedana, already there, vedana's down there, experience is caused by sensory contact, will is caused by delusion, and consciousness is the fifth of the states of existence, that is caused by delusion. So says the Buddha here. I like it with, it was also another way the Buddha said that consciousness and the objects of consciousness. So like mind, what causes mind? It's the objects of mind. He's called them the two sheaves of reeds, using a simile which everybody would have known in the time of the Buddha. And those two sheaves of reeds, just leaning against each other, if you take one away, the other one will fall down. You can't have two there at the same time. And there's a couple of monks outside, but I'm senior to both of them, so I can carry on talking. It's very good that I'm a senior monk now, because others have to respect me. So I don't feel bad about carrying on here. Now, from New Zealand, next question. Do you believe there still exists today arahats in this world? I don't believe. I know. Belief is uncertain. From Germany. How do you digest the Dhamma so it becomes flesh and blood? I think you can only understand if you can feel it, not by thinking. Are practicing stillness in meditation all to do? Yes. To get that stillness, to practice the Eightfold Path. That's why the Buddha always said, what is the cause for all stages of enlightenment, for understanding deeply? The Eightfold Path, that's a path. The highest part of that path is Sammasamadhi, which is always one or more of the jhanas. And that's where the Buddha said, that's just the path. Now the destination, what happens? And that's where they keep on saying that when you reach that Sammasamadhi, that stillness is the cause for seeing things as they truly are. Yathābhūtayānadassana. And that's the cause for the enlightenment to happen. And that's the cause for the knowledge of enlightenment. Experience first, and then knowledge afterwards. Next question. The statement that everyone gets reborn in the second jhana realm when the universe is destroyed is weird. Does that mean any Tom, Dick and Harry? What about the ladies? Get into jhana realm without meditating? Yes. The reason that's the only place where you can go. It's almost like the body. There's no ways the body can exist anymore. So the only realm you can go to is the mind. The mind is freed from the body for a while. Actually for a long time. You may think it's weird. Once you understand what these jhanas are, it's not weird at all. It's just the only place where you can go. Dear Ajahn, in Sanyutta 35 it is said, what is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering is not self. Why the last part? Why being suffering implies being not self? I don't get it. Look, if there was really, that was a soul, a permanent essence, that's why I use that description, a permanent essence. A soul is not something which changes. You know, sometimes a soul is like an essential part of the universe. What used to be called a fundamental particle, which you use that and everything else is built up from that. They had the idea that as atom, you know, in science, and if there's any people who know ancient Greek, the word atom comes from atoma. It means non-divisible. It's a solid core particle. Non-divisible means permanent, unbreakable. You can build up other things from an atom, but you cannot split it up. And good on the Kiwis, good old Rutherford, he actually split the atom. Now, if I mention this, atom, the Greeks and the Indians had a lot of contacts. The atom and the atma. The Buddha split the atma a long time before Rutherford did. He realized that this solid thing we call the soul, the essence of each human being or whatever, even the paramatma of the Hindus could split that, which means there's nothing here. And that was an amazing thing to know that. Because a self, a soul, an essence which always gets reborn. Sometimes people say, yeah, well, my soul gets changed, but what is the absolute internal, unchangeable essence of this thing you call a self? If it's all subject to change, then it can all disappear. There's no unchangeable core and essence in there. It can't be a real, what people think of as their soul. So that's actually where that comes from. Okay, now is there any other questions from the floor here? Okay, just wants to say something more. Okay.
Ajahn Pram, regarding the speculative view, just before the end, I'm so glad I hear this, that the Buddha is what I call not. Don't believe in the speculative view. Yeah. I was thinking of the press, the current press, the news, okay?
Yeah.
They're so full of this bullshit speculative thing,
Yeah.
World war coming, three, and they have different views, and then the other one said this, and then it's so distressing to hear all this nonsense that I and a lot of people too, they don't watch the news now, this thing, If they can only, these people can, understand all these things, it'll make the world a better place to live in. Too much speculative nonsense going on.
Yes. And please remember, always be careful of news which makes you afraid. Because the fear is the usual way of controlling people. It's one of the reasons why here we never say that, don't question me, Eddie. If you keep questioning me, I will send you to hell. That's how people control, and hopefully you understand. You can come in here and say whatever you like, and do a lot of wise stuff, but we don't have any punishments, nothing to fear, because it's not about controlling, it's about liberating, freedom, not imprisoning. At the back. Yeah, got the ball, Bill.
Thank you, Ajahn. Okay, please excuse me if the question is a little bit not very well asked, okay?
Yeah.
We don't want to come back because there's too much suffering. Then where are we going after death? And what is liberation? And what is Nibbana? And is Nibbana a physical place or is just a...
Nibbana is a freedom.
a cessation of all of this, including you, when there's no person to be reborn, and there's no rebirth anymore. You are just a process, cause and effect. This is why they taught dependent origination. This is describing who you are, a process which is caused. Delusion, which causes will, which causes consciousness and experience and craving and other states of rebirth, going round and round and round and round. But there is not a person. Suffering exists, but no sufferer. When you see that, not as a view, but as an experience, then you can vanish. And that's the end of things for you. Okay, you got a question? There's a question here from Nicholas. Nicholas over here. Okay, no, the nun is okay. Senior. Give respect.
Thank you, Ajahn. Just checked if I understood when you talked about the vipalasa, about the right view, the perception and thoughts.
Yes.
So I think that that's what I use to understand what's going on, you know, moment to moment and day to day. So I heard you said view was the last one. Was that right?
No, you can start anywhere. It's like a vicious circle.
That's what I thought. So is there, a very good shortcut you can tell me of how to use those three, whether it's the perception or they're changing, to maintain cultivating good and skillful states of mind? Thank you.
Yes, indeed. The view is the first one which is clarified, which is cleaned up. And the way that's cleaned up is you suspend all your thoughts with being silent inside, being peaceful, being still. And that, changes your perceptions too. You can actually see things like you disappearing. It's weird. And the first time you see your body just totally vanish, wow. And afterwards, what was this? So the fog is now in dry land. It's the first time it can perceive the absence of the five senses. It's not a speculative view, you're actually on dry land. That's why it's a bit weird and can be frightening. And often when a person gets into a jhana or a close, oh, it's a bit much for me. It's not too much for you, it's just scary because you're going to where you've never been before. Like the prisoner who's being released from jail. Just don't want to be released. I'm used to jail. It's not pleasant, but at least I know what to do. Freedom is challenging for a prisoner. This is one of the reasons why that after a while you can't resist it. After a while you just go onto the dry land, your perception totally change. As a result of that, the view is changing. And soon that view is so changed, not by speculation or just making inferences, by your direct experience. It's not like a belief in a God. It's actually experiencing cessation, which is a totally different ball game. Sometimes people ask, I tell jokes. Did the Buddha ever tell jokes? Or even just this anagami called Chitta, the householder. He was a general. He went to see the Nigantanataputta, otherwise known as Mahavira, the leader of the Jaina sect or religion. And the Jaina leader said, oh, here comes one of the very well-known disciples of the Buddha. And he said, we've been talking about meditation. Can you stop thought? What do you think, Chitta? And Chitta replied, I don't believe that at all. There you are. Here's one of the chief disciples of the Buddha.
And he says you can't stop thinking in your mind. Thinking is natural. It's like the current in the Ganges. And think that you can stop that current just by putting your fist in the Ganges and try and stop it, it can't be done. And even Chitta says so as well. And Chitta said, I said I don't believe that. I know it. Because I get into jhanas. And then the leader said, oh, these Buddhists, they're very tricky and sneaky. So that when I read that, that was funny. Anyway, I thought it was anyway. He tricked Nataputta. Okay. Oh, you had a question, Nicholas? Made this the last question, yes. What is the question? Because poor old Bill, he must be feeling tired. Sit down on a chair, Bill. Put your feet up, yes. Okay, yeah. Yeah, you just say it and I'll just repeat it. What is impermanent is suffering, yes. Not for the reasoning and philosophy, but you know, you may have a wonderful time over in Jhana Grove on retreat, but you know it's going to end. And that's kind of suffering. So this is our problem here, that often that we have to understand that even in the heavenly realms, and Jhana Grove is maybe the closest to the heavenly realm you have here in Western Australia. And even that, because it's going to end, it kind of spoils any happiness. Okay, this story just came up the other day because a few of the monks were thinking of going on a pilgrimage to India. And somebody was talking about Emperor Ashoka. And Emperor Ashoka, he had a brother. And the brother was not interested in Dharma at all. He was the brother of one of the powerful emperors. He just liked using his authority, you know, to enjoy himself, eat great food, you know, have great girlfriends, listen to music, whatever he wanted to do, he could do. And so he thought he'd have to teach his brother a lesson. So he went to take a bath. This is the emperor. And he left all his royal regalia. And I saw a photo of that poor King Charles III now. The amount of clothes he had to wear was enormous. Anyway, King Ashoka had lots of clothes as well. He left it outside, he went to take his bath. And his brother walked past and saw all the royal regalia outside the bathhouse. And one of his friends said, why didn't you just try it on? You know, if the emperor dies, you'll have to be the emperor. You'll have to wear this. Just try it. I said, oh, I can't do that. That's illegal. That's a capital offense. But we won't say. You just try it on for 5 minutes. The emperor's in his bath. He will never find out. And of course, the emperor's brother wanted to do this, so he put it all on. And just now, it's like being the emperor. And that moment, Ashoka came out. What are you doing, brother? I was only just trying it on for size. I wasn't trying to become the emperor or anything. I don't want to be the emperor. And Ashoka said, you know that's illegal. And being an emperor, I have to administer the law without any prejudice. You know, if worn my clothes, that's a capital offense. I will have to execute you. He was serious. And this poor man, this brother was just so terrified. And he pleaded and pleaded for mercy. And Ashoka said, look, you're my brother. What I will do, I'll give you 1 week clemency. But after 1 week, you'll be executed. And in that 1 week, you can enjoy just all of the food, you can enjoy all my wives, you can enjoy all the entertainment, whatever you want, for 7 days. But after 7 days, you'll be executed. And the emperor went away. And after 7 days, he called in his brother
had the executioner right next to him. He said, "Did you enjoy the pleasures of being an emperor for 7 days?" And then the brother said, "How could you enjoy that when I knew I was going to be killed? I couldn't even sleep at night, let alone enjoy anything." And then Ashoka smiled and said, "Exactly. If you're an emperor for 7 days or 70 years, it will always end in death. What is impermanent is suffering. I never was going to execute you anyway. You are free. I just wanted to teach you the Dhamma." Thank you, brother. And that's where Ashoka's brother learns about things like Four Noble Truths. Even experiencing the pleasures of being an emperor for 7 days was suffering if you knew it was going to end. Okay, I'll leave you with that story. I'm going way over time. So thank you all for listening. We can now bow 3 times and do the Arahang Sammasambuddho.